Australian True Crime. The live show is coming.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The producers of this podcast recognize the traditional owners of the land on which it's recorded. They pay respect to the Aboriginal elders past, present, and those emerging.
The following podcast contains content of a graphic, violent nature and is not suitable for children.
Thank you. Are you aware why we're here?
Yes.
You understand that this is an inquest into the disappearance of an 18-year-old girl or young woman in June of 1978?
Yes.
Without being unduly rude about it, you have a career of committing criminal offences from about the age of 9 years until the importation, which of course you deny.
Of course I denied it.
Yeah, well, putting that aside, do you agree that you've led a life of crime?
No.
Seriously?
I'm serious.
You don't think you've led a life of crime?
No, do you?
Well, it doesn't much matter what I think, mercifully.
Well, you're making the assertion.
I'm asking you.
He's asking
your observations.
Beg your pardon?
He's asking a question. He's not making an assertion. Would it be fair to say that you appeared in court charged with a great many crimes before you were 20?
Well, I don't know about a great many.
Well, more than the average.
Well, what's the average?
Well, I don't know. You tell me. But my present information is to think that you have committed, or at least been accused of committing, more than the average number of crimes by the time you were 20.
I don't say I'm an angel, I'm not saying that.
All right, well, we're getting somewhere. We've descended from the status of angels. Let's just get it down to the status of human beings.
Asking the questions there is Justice Peter Hamill of the Supreme Court of New South Wales. Well, that's who he is now, but back then in 2011, He was acting as counsel assisting the New South Wales coroner, and the man he was questioning was Neville Tween. He was a person of interest in the 1978 disappearance of Sydney teenager Trudy Adams. That matter remains unsolved, as do many matters linked to Neville Tween and his associates, including a string of sexual assaults committed around Sydney's northern beaches in the 70s and 80s. These cases are the subject of the second series of the ABC true crime podcast Unravel, Barrenjoey Road.
This is Australian True Crime with Michelle Laurie and Emily Webb. Come with us as we go beyond the news cycle to find out how people become killers, how people become victims, and what happens next.
Unravel, Barrenjoey Road inspired an ABC documentary series of the same name. The two journalists who worked on both those projects are Neil Mercer and Ruby Jones. And 3 years after the podcast first aired, they're still investigating the story and still turning up new leads. Because what they discovered very early on was that the disappearance of Trudy Adams was just the beginning. Arguably more important than what happened to Trudy is the question of how Neville Tween was able to operate seemingly with immunity for decades. There's a link to the second season of Unravel in the show notes of this episode of Australian True Crime, and Neil Mercer and Ruby Jones have just released a book that expands upon the podcast and the documentary and adds new information to the story. Neil joined me to talk about it.
I guess in 1978 I was a relatively junior reporter. I'd started about 5 or 6 years earlier, so I was aware of the Trudy Adams case. I mean, it was a big case in New South Wales, in Sydney. It dominated the afternoon papers, the tabloids in particular, June, July, and into the rest of 1978. She was a young girl from a very good family, and she just disappeared into thin air. And the homicide squad had gone up to the northern beaches of Sydney, which is this, you know, beautiful area, good, you know, surf and all that sort of thing. And I remember that she just vanished without trace. And I think the theory back then was the Ku'ring'i Chase National Park, which is vast, which is just back from the beaches. I think the theory at the time was she'd been abducted, murdered, and more likely than not, her body had been disposed of in the Ku'ring'i Chase National Park.
Unfortunately, there have been a lot of unsolved disappearances since Trudy went missing. A lot of young women have gone missing. So why have you ended up so fascinated by her case, Neil?
The Trudy Adams case was one of those that had huge publicity at the time she disappeared in June 1978. But it also cropped up from time to time. There were numerous reinvestigations over the years. So I remember it was never far from the headlines. A number of teams of New South Wales police tried to reinvestigate her disappearance and also one or two murders that appeared to be linked to her. And also we had, you know, these terrible sexual assaults that everybody became aware of in 1978 after Trudy Adams disappeared, because all these young women started coming forward. Trudy had disappeared, and all of a sudden all these young women started coming forward and telling the detectives that they'd been abducted while hitchhiking, mostly on Barrenjoey Road, but if not Barrenjoey Road, you know, quite close to that. And they'd been abducted at gunpoint, handcuffed, and taken into the bush and sexually assaulted. So there were a number of things that New South Wales police were trying to investigate, and I think this is partly perhaps where the problem with the whole thing arose initially, is that the homicide squad was sent in to look at the disappearance and certain murder of Trudy Adams. When they couldn't find any trace of Trudy, they couldn't find anything, any of her jewellery or clothing, no trace certainly of her body, they basically decided that their job was done, they couldn't do any more. But at the same time, while they were investigating her disappearance, they'd turned up all these sexual assaults. And one of the mysteries of this entire saga is why weren't those sexual assaults properly and thoroughly investigated at the time? Because a lot of young women very courageously came forward and volunteered information to police. And there's no doubt that police at the time thought the two things were inextricably linked, that is, the disappearance of Trudy and the sexual assaults. They believed the same suspects were more than likely involved. But it seems that these shocking rapes were never thoroughly investigated. They, when the homicide squad left, because they couldn't really get any more information about what had happened to Trudy, it seems that the rapes, the investigation into that, just sort of stopped.
One of the things I loved about the podcast, Neil, was the way that it evoked the landscape of Barrenjoey Road and the northern beaches of Sydney. But also it was so much about the time that Trudy went missing, the 1970s, and the youth culture of that area at the time. You were part of it. So can you describe it for us, please, Neil?
Yeah, Barrenjoey Road is the thoroughfare or the main link, I guess, through much of Sydney's northern beaches. Back in 1978, I'm pretty sure it was just two lanes. It wasn't what you'd call a main road or a highway by any stretch. A lot of young people on the northern beaches hitchhiked at that time, and they would have hitchhiked on Barrenjoey Road, but simply because there was no public transport at night. It was an accepted way of doing things. There was a very strong surf culture there, beautiful beaches, like Trudy Adams and her friends would spend their days at the beach, and then they'd go to parties with their friends on a Friday, Saturday night, and they all knew each other. The northern beaches, particularly back then, was probably a series of little villages, really, and everybody sort of knew everybody else. And even when hitchhiking, it was quite frequent that you got picked up by somebody you knew or who was a friend of a friend. So you had this very laid-back beach culture, a beautiful physical environment, you know, crystal clear water, white beaches, and just back from that you had this huge mass of very rugged bushland, the Ku'ingai Chase National Park. It was a beautiful spot to grow up, but as we now know, around that time, the 1970s, it also had a very, very dark underbelly.
I don't think you can talk about that time and place, though, without talking about the sexism, can you, Neil? It was pretty embedded.
I think there was, and I think that, you know, the girls stayed on the beach, as some of Trudy's friends told us, you know, years and years and years later. The girls basically stayed on the beach. The boys went out surfing. They were living this lifestyle, and they were sort of carefree, but the Trudy Adams case changed a lot of things, I think. I think it deeply affected a lot of Trudy's friends, the women and men who were living there, who knew her, and it affected them for many, many years. It was reopened around 1995. There were a number of reinvestigations. There was the investigation in 1978, which lasted full time. The homicide squad was there about 6 to 8 weeks. They were then taken off the case, and the chief investigator was told by his boss at Homicide, "You're a homicide investigator, not a rape investigator." And while homicide detectives continued to work on it part-time, and they did, and they kept on logging all the information that was coming in, essentially the rape cases just fell by the wayside. I mean, it seems staggering now that you could have 14 shocking assaults on young women, and some of them were children. They were just 14 years old, and that would just lapse. But police tried to varying degrees over the years, and they had what part of the problem was that in 1978 they had very specific suspects in mind. This guy by the name of Neville Tween. Neville Tween was the chief suspect because he'd been identified by some of the young women who'd been picked up and assaulted. There was also other evidence that he'd been involved in a sexual assault on a male in pretty much exactly the same area where the young women were being assaulted. He was a career criminal. He had access to guns and handcuffs. And there were other bits of information that should have told the New South Wales police that he was their main man. But they didn't go near him for, well, 30 years. Not a single question. They didn't bring pressure to bear on him in any way. It appears there was a leak from within the police investigation in 1978 because Neville Tween's lawyer actually phoned up the lead homicide investigator and said, I understand you're investigating my client, that is Neville Tween. He's not going to speak to you. He's got nothing to do with anything. He doesn't want to talk to you, which was a bit of a preemptive strike, I suppose. But the question is, how did Tween's solicitor know that he was even under inquiry? Because that was very tightly held by homicide police at the time. So there's a suggestion of corruption and certainly a leak.
The Neville Tween story that you uncovered is one of those ones that makes us really paranoid, I think, about our justice system. And it makes us wonder who is living in our own communities now, because it comes to pass that despite his terrifying history of offending, Neville Tween was able to live and operate unhindered, it seems, in the Northern Beaches for decades. And not only that, he trained up several generations of other sexual predators to offend with him.
Well, that's exactly what he was doing. He and his associates were preying on these young women, and they were predators. They were, we believe, lying in wait. They would be in a car outside licensed premises, you know, the Newport Arms Hotel, for instance, surf club dancers, and a lot of the young women, well, in fact, the vast majority, reported being picked up very quickly after they left the licensed premises or where they'd been drinking. And it was clear that Neville Tween had been lying in wait with one or two of his mates, and he had this extraordinary criminal record. He had been in trouble since he was a kid. And, yeah, you're right, he's living, you know, not far from the Newport Surf Club, just a little bit back from the beach at a place called Terry Hills. And he had this extensive criminal history, safe robberies. He was in possession of machine guns. You know, he had access to handguns. He's out there in his car with one or two of his mates, and the offenders seem to change over time. Neville Tween is the one, you know, the one constant in this, but the abductions, he does them with one or two of his mates. And they're also pretty hardened criminals with long criminal histories, in trouble with the law since they were kids. But Tween is the driving force in all this. And it's remarkable that, really, he was never questioned for 30 years. I mean, one of the women who was assaulted said she helped identify him, did that with the New South Wales police, and then she said, I didn't hear anything for 26 years. Nothing.
Australian True Crime is a proudly independent podcast produced by us, with no corporate or network overlords policing our content. Unfortunately, that means we get none of their cash either. If you'd like to sign up as a patron for the cost of a cup of coffee a month, even in these unprecedented times, you can go to patreon.com/osttruecrimepod. There's a link for that in the show notes too. Thank you to these patrons: Jenny Haynes, Jonathan Coe, Tess Walsh, Vicky Jones-Alwyn, and Anne Lambeck.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. and they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Is Unravel Season 2, Barrenjoey Road. I'm Ruby Jones and I'm trying to find out what happened to Trudy Adams. In 2011, after a police reinvestigation that failed to crack the case, a coronial inquest was held. A last attempt to air all the evidence, interview the suspects and come up with answers. At the inquest, the main suspect, Neville Tween, was questioned for close to 5 hours. Everything he said was recorded. I've got those tapes. And so now, for the first time ever, Tween's testimony will be made public.
Are you aware why we're here?
Yes.
You understand that this is an inquest into the disappearance of an 18-year-old girl or young woman in June of 1978?
Yes.
Without being unduly rude about it, you have a career of committing criminal offences from about the age of 9 years until the importation, which of course you deny.
Of course I denied it.
Yeah, well, putting that aside, do you agree that you've led a life of crime?
No.
Seriously?
I'm serious.
You don't think you've led a life of crime?
No, do you?
Well, it doesn't much matter what I think, mercifully.
Well, you're making the assertion.
I'm asking you.
He's asking your observations.
Beg your pardon?
He's asking a question. He's not making an assertion. Do you agree that whether it's a matter of police picking you up, there was a lot of times when you were appearing in courts as a young man and as a juvenile accused of a great many crimes?
Yes, but the prosecutor set me up as the big bad wolf.
All right.
Not only is Neville Tween refusing to answer even the most basic questions, he's also asking questions of his own. It's like he's trying to wrestle control of the whole inquest from Peter Hamill.
He was fairly comfortable in the fact that he knew if there was a case that was capable of proving his guilt beyond reasonable doubt, he would have been charged. And so his behaviour in the witness box reflected an arrogance, I thought.
The counsel assisting the coroner, Peter Hamill, is now a Supreme Court judge. He says Tween was not your average witness.
Well, I mean, he was a career criminal. I mean, we deal with these people sometimes and not frequently. There's not all that many people that you can say, well, you know, at some point in his 20s he decided to be a criminal and that was going to be his life, and that, I think, was what Neville Tween was.
Most people are intimidated by the courtroom, the coroner, the robes, the whole process. It's designed that way. But not Tween. In fact, the longer Tween spends on the stand, the more arrogant he becomes. He gets impatient with all the questions about his past. He says he wants to talk about Trudy Adams and the car that was seen picking her up.
If we would just consider that you didn't get to New South Wales until 74, we could clear you. Do you follow?
Yes. What about the car?
Well, forget about the car. We'll come to the car.
About it,
no. Well, you owned, did you not, 1972 Holden panel van at the time that Trudy Adams disappeared, last seen getting into a Holden panel van.
Gone, yes.
Is that right? Do you agree with that?
Wait on. What,
do you agree with that?
What year panel van, I don't know. It's a panel van. Now, does it have side windows in it?
Did you own a panel van of that kind?
Wait on. No, never mind reversing that on me.
No,
No, well, you asked me to talk about panel vans, Mr. Anderson.
Here was the question.
The way it works is he asks the questions, you don't.
That's not the only time that Tween makes an interesting concession and then quickly backs off from what he's just said. It happens again when Tween's asked about one of his criminal associates, Len Evans. That's the guy who lives in New Zealand, who's suspected of being involved in some of those earlier assaults.
Did Len Evans ever come to Australia?
Oh, yes.
Did you ever spend any time with him in Australia?
Yes, I did, yes.
And you were aware that he went to jail?
Yes. There was one exception there.
What do you mean, one exception to what?
Oh, we did something together.
What did you do together?
No interest to you.
What did you do?
Oh, I wouldn't say that.
What did you do?
I'm not going to tell you. Do I have to tell him?
Oh, yes, you've been asked a question. You're doing well. You're really keeping the whole room entertained, and I think...
I don't intend to keep it entertained.
Well, you're
I intend to try and find out what's... This Trudy Adams has just gone so far, and they should put the truth on the table.
Well, you're not going to find that out unless you start answering questions, right?
And he's not going to find out going back to New Zealand and whoop whoop 13, 40 years ago.
He was the chief suspect in the murder of Trudy Adams. He was the chief suspect in at least 14 rapes. We now think, and a lot of the police think, there was more likely to be 20 or 30. It's really impossible to put a number on it, but it's more than what's on the official police running sheets. He's also drug dealing. He seems to have led, for quite a period of his life, quite a charmed life in many ways, and there's, you know, a suspicion as to why that is. I think there were high hopes for the inquest in 2011. It was obviously a very, very long time after Trudy disappeared, but what's pretty remarkable is that a lot of her friends turned up all those years later. A lot of her girlfriends, Steve Norris, her boyfriend at the time, turned up, her father and her brother, and they spent just about every day at the inquest watching the evidence unfold. And I think some of them were really hopeful that the inquest might lead to some breakthrough in the case, that finally a bit of information would be knocked loose and something would come out that would lead, if not to the conviction of Trudy's killer, then perhaps at least to the location of her body, to give some sort of, I don't like the word closure, but I suppose that's what it is in a sense, that they could finally say goodbye if they could find her body. But sadly, it just did not happen. Neville Tween, the chief suspect, was called to the inquest. By that stage, he had finally been locked up, but not for any of the sexual assaults and not for over Trudy Adams. He'd been locked up over drugs. He was in jail. He was an old man. He displayed his complete indifference to Trudy's father, her friends. While he was in the witness box, he was practiced in the witness box. He'd been in the witness box many times over many years for various crimes. And he was just dismissive. He had nothing to do with it, never met Trudy, never saw her. He did make one rather uncomfortable point, though, on which he was correct. He kept on saying, why haven't the police ever approached me about this? Why didn't they approach me back then? If I'm the chief suspect, why did nobody speak to me for like 30 years? Which was very uncomfortable because it was true and it raised all sorts of questions.
It seems as though the inquest was a pretty unsatisfactory affair all the way around, but did anything come out of it at all in terms of useful information, anything about what happened to Trudy or where her remains might be?
I think what emerged in the inquest was that they'd been picking up, Neville Tween and his mates had been picking up these young girls around Barrenjoey Road. The girls had jumped into the back of the car. They'd then been confronted by the passenger holding a gun in their face. They were handcuffed, their eyes were taped, and they were taken into the bushland. In one instance, a woman who got into the car, had the gun pointed at her, and she'd had a few drinks, but she thought it was some sort of practical joke, and she actually said to the men, "You're joking," grabbed for the gun, which then went off. The bullet obviously narrowly missing her because she lived to tell what had happened. And that, I think, gave police a glimpse of what might have happened to Trudy Adams, that she was a very strong young woman. Feisty was a word that was used to describe her at the inquest. And Steve Norris, her boyfriend at the time she went missing, and previously her mother, who had died some years earlier, but they had both said she would have resisted any attack very, very strongly. And police believe that that's what happened to Trudy, that the gun was pointed at her, or a gun was pointed at her. She grabbed for it, and in the resulting struggle, it went off and she was killed, and that her body was most likely disposed of somewhere in the Ku'ring'ai Chase National Park, which was, it was a very rugged area of bushland. I think people were very disappointed, and one of the emotions that her friends have explained to Ruby Jones, my co-author, and myself over the last couple of years is the anger that they felt at the inquest and the anger that they've felt over many years that this was never investigated as thoroughly as it should have been and was never investigated in a timely fashion, that it sort of went on for years and hopes were raised and hopes were raised and dashed and raised again and then dashed again by a new inquiry. I think anger is probably the predominant emotion for a lot of them. Sadness, obviously, because it's never been solved and her body has never been found. But I think there's a fair degree of anger there, as I say, that more should have been done. And that's not just the view of Trudy's friends. It's the view of a number of police who have been involved in reinvestigations down through the decades, that not enough was done at the time. Leads were simply not followed up. People weren't interviewed. And it was really unsatisfactory. The inquest, I think people left that inquest feeling that it was unsatisfactory and that the whole episode had not been handled well, to say the least.
There's a lot of new information in this book, again, so you and Ruby Jones are obviously still working on this investigation. What inspired you to keep going with it after the podcast and the documentary?
I think what inspired us was to hopefully find some sort of answer as to what might have happened to Trudy. As I say, you live in hope, and cases, there's always somebody out there who knows something, and even though it's a very long time ago, Neville Tween may have said things to some people. There might be somebody who stumbled across a bit of information years ago who wasn't at the time willing to come forward, but who might be now more willing to do so. And so I think Ruby and I felt that she deserved better than what she'd had. She deserved some justice and, you know, that the book might, it's a long shot, but just might, lead somebody to come forward with a new piece of information.
The chemistry between you and Ruby Jones is fantastic, and given that you both decided to work on another incarnation on a book, I gather that it's a harmonious working relationship.
It was a really great experience working with Ruby. I mean, she brought a fresh eye to it. She had not been around, obviously, when Trudy disappeared. She hadn't had that much to do with crime, New South Wales police, corruption. So she had a completely, fresh perspective. And, it was a long and difficult inquiry and case to cover because we were uncovering stuff, information, as we went. For instance, when we found Steve Norris, Trudy's boyfriend at the time in 78, he had actually kept a huge trove of documents which were invaluable in the television series and also the podcast, but also probably even more valuable for the book that we've just published, because it was seven volumes of seven lever arch folders of information, including all the police running sheets, the day-to-day events that they record in those days on a typewriter and on a piece of paper, not on a computer. What's happening day-to-day? Information coming in from the public, information from Trudy's family, interviews with suspects, interviews with the victims of the sexual assaults. So you had this contemporaneous record of what was going on in the police investigation, a day-by-day description, really. And that, you know, that information fell into our lap via Steve Norris. We weren't expecting that at all, and that was just a huge breakthrough for us because it gave us a very good insight into the difficulties that the police faced. It was before computers. They were swamped with members of the public phoning up with theories about what had happened to Trudy, sightings of panel vans, you know, all this sort of stuff. So it did give Ruby and myself a pretty good insight into what the police were facing at the time.
You so often find that with cold cases, don't you, that someone's held on to a treasure trove of material just hoping that it'll be useful someday, that someone will come back around again.
You're right. It is interesting that there's often one person who keeps a whole pile of documentation, and this was the case with Steve Norris. And it had been sitting in a shed since the inquest, which was 2011. So it had been sitting in these boxes gathering dust for years and years. And before that, it had been sitting in, you know, the government archive or the police archive for decades gathering dust. So discovering that was like finding some sort of treasure for us in terms of the information that was contained in there.
So have you and Ruby solved the case of the disappearance of Trudy Adams?
I don't know if I'd go that far, but I think there's little doubt that the police who reinvestigated it believed that Neville Tween was responsible for the disappearance of Trudy Adams, and certainly the rapes that took place in the 70s on the northern beaches, multiple rapes. They had little doubt that he was involved in that because he'd been identified by some of the women. There was other evidence that pointed to it being him, and they also believed that he was more than likely responsible for the disappearance of Trudy. So I don't know you can say we've solved it. We believe it was Neville Tween and one of his associates at the time. You know, everything points to him, and indeed there's people from his own family who actually believe it was, they're pretty much certain it was him.
Seeing the case, but also the gender politics of the era through both of your eyes is a really interesting part of the Barrenjoey Road project, I reckon, because Ruby Jones is every bit a young female ABC journalist from Sydney. She's a very, you know, particular sort of young woman, and she lives a very different life and has a very different worldview to that of Trudy and her friends. They were very particular young women as well. You know, they're living in the northern beaches of Sydney in the 70s, and you are the bridge between those two worlds. Was it an interesting experience for you just to be sort of Ruby's tour guide into Trudy's world?
Look, it was because I was around then, and I used to hitchhike to go to the beach. And back in those days, and I guess it's a little different, I was a young teenage boy, but people used to hitchhike to go to the beach, and it was very carefree. I think we had a lot more freedom to do things. We were allowed out a lot more. I mean, just going to the beach by yourself a lot. The young kids there were in this beautiful part of Australia, you know, magic surf, beautiful beaches, really pretty and, you know, and sort of remote. It's called the Insular Peninsula, and that's partly because people who are born there more than likely don't leave because they don't have much reason to, as far as they're concerned. It's a very, very beautiful part of the world, and why would you leave? So it's like this little community within itself, within Sydney, and it's just a magic spot. And I think it was a carefree lifestyle for many of them back then. The disappearance of Trudy Adams changed that, I think, in the minds of a lot of young people because, well, it happened, but also partly because it was never solved.
Thank you to Neil Mercer, who, along with Ruby Jones, has written Barrenjoey Road, the book. It's the next instalment of their investigation into the unsolved crimes on Sydney's northern beaches in the 1970s and 80s. It's available now through ABC Books. Thank you to these patrons: Danielle Quarrell, Pip Gellard, Carolyn Lubbock, Mary Roston and Kate Bird. And thank you to you so much for downloading this episode of Australian True Crime. We'll be back next week.
This has been another Smart Fella production in conjunction with the Acast Creator Network.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Australian True Crime. The live show is coming.